From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, June 12th, 2018. And on this day, why Governor Paul LePage says he will not certify the election results and what that does and does not mean. And the attorney for the woman accused in the beating death of her 10-year-old daughter argues before the Maine Supreme Judicial Court to have state prosecutors removed for confidentiality reasons. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
Well, it's election day, and turnout is being described by Secretary of State Matt Dunlap, from whom more in a moment, as mixed. Some places which have local issues on the ballot are seeing relatively heavy turnout, others less so.
When I went to Old Town this morning, I stood in line. But then here we are in Augusta, and people are kind of trickling in, which is what you typically see in a primary election.
But no matter the turnout, Maine Governor Paul LePage says he will not certify the results of today's election because he is opposed to ranked choice voting, which Mainers are using for the first time in the primaries today. But Dunlap says the governor's threat is not that meaningful because certification isn't required in party primary nomination contests. Mal Leary has details.
LePage says that ranked choice voting is unconstitutional and that he will not be a party to allowing the new system to be used in the primary elections. He says the system violates a basic constitutional principle.
In the United States, at my age in particular, I'm used to one person, one vote, not one person, five votes. Therefore, as it relates to the gubernatorial election and relates to the primaries of people running for the House and Senate, I cannot participate in ranked choice voting because I believe it to be repugnant to the Constitution.
LePage also cites what he says are unresolved legal questions surrounding ranked choice voting.
The Supreme Court has said it's unconstitutional. They said it's okay for the primaries, but we've set precedent since the 1880s that our primary system has already been set, so they can't. They got to decide which is right.
But Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap says LePage's threat is merely symbolic, because the governor has no role to play in primaries, in which candidates are nominated, not elected.
The law says that in an election, it's directory. He has to certify the election. That's not even relevant here because this is a nomination. It's not an election. So he can't keep people from qualifying for the November ballot by failing to sign a proclamation.
Dunlap says LePage does have a role to play in certifying the results of the ranked choice voting ballot question. And the governor indicated that if the voters reject the question and repeal ranked choice voting, he might certify that result. But if the yes side prevails, Dunlap isn't exactly sure what happens then.
Well, I think we have to cross that bridge when we get to it. I mean, the reality is he can't single-handedly thwart the progress of democracy based on his personal feelings about something.
About the only thing that LePage and Dunlap agree on about this election is that it's likely to result in one or more court challenges to the primary results or to the continuation of ranked choice voting itself. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The attorney for the woman accused in the beating death of her 10-year-old daughter argued before the Maine Supreme Judicial Court today to have state prosecutors removed from the case and issue her confidential records, including a psychological exam, that the defense attorney says the state improperly subpoenaed from Sharon Carrillo's former school. Patty White reports.
It was in mid-March when state prosecutors sent a subpoena to a school Sharon Carrillo previously attended in New York. The subpoena ordered the school's CEO to appear in court in Maine on April 6th and produce Carrillo's school records, or the alternative, to send the records by email. The CEO chose the latter, and state prosecutors received 73 pages of confidential information. But those records were obtained improperly, says Carrillo's defense attorney Chris McLean, because there was in fact no court date set for April 6th.
We all make mistakes. It's a mistake when we put the wrong date on a subpoena. It's not a mistake when we put a fictitious court date on a subpoena. And we instruct a witness to appear in a court in the state of Maine on a fictitious court date.
McLean told the Maine Supreme Judicial Court that state prosecutors also sent the subpoena across state lines without prior approval and failed to instruct the school to send confidential records directly to a judge. A lower court agreed that the state made errors and ordered Carrillo's confidential records to be placed under seal. But McLean also wants the two state prosecutors on the case to be disqualified.
I'm representing a young woman who's shaken to the core by the violations of her rights. I represent a young woman who has the mentality of a 12-year-old child, and she's
So, Mr. McLean, I'm going to stop you right there.
At Tuesday's hearing, Chief Justice Lee Softly pointed out that McLean has already told news outlets that 33-year-old Carrillo has cognitive challenges. That's also what the state learned from the subpoenaed records. Given that it's information that's already known, Softly asked,
what is it that is lost since everyone appears to understand that there are challenges your client faces?
According to Assistant Attorney General Leanne Robin, nothing. She told the justices that McLean failed to show how Carrillo would be harmed by prosecutors staying on the case.
To encourage a pretrial motion to disqualify prosecutors when they are in error of some sort would be a terrible precedent.
Robin also said the mistakes the state made when it issued the subpoena were not intentional, which drew this question from Justice Softly.
How can a fictitiously established court date, which is part of the threat if you fail to send the records, be something that is purely a mistake? That looks like intentional action.
Robin chalked it up to procedural errors and said the Attorney General's office is taking action to prevent similar problems in the future. Now, Maine Supreme Court justices will decide whether it's appropriate to also disqualify the state prosecutors involved from the case. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Maine's Public Utilities Commission today reopened consideration of consumer subsidies for a floating wind turbine project planned off Monhegan Island that could potentially add more delay to its development. Fred Bever has details.
The Aqua Ventus project, spearheaded by the University of Maine, would produce up to 12 megawatts of electricity. Eventually, it could be expanded to produce much more if the pioneering floating platform technology proves successful. 4 years ago, regulators approved a consumer subsidy for the project, amounting to about 73 cents a month on an average residential electricity bill. But members of the Public Utilities Commission now say they want a new look at the subsidy as electricity markets and technologies have changed. Project leader Habib Dagher says recent contracts announced for significant fixed-platform offshore wind projects in Massachusetts and Rhode Island show that the sector is about to take off in the U.S.
We are talking to folks all over the Northeast Coast who are planning the next phase of projects, which would be floating. There'll be a lot of energy needs as we take out nuclear plants and coal plants from the Northeast United States.
It's unclear how long the new review may take or whether the project can meet its goal of electricity production by 2020. Dagher says project partners aren't spooked by the regulatory delay and that the U.S. Department of Energy is sticking with its $40 million commitment to the project. The Natural Resources Council of Maine, meanwhile, says that whatever the fate of this project, the decision by appointees of Governor Paul LePage shows that his administration will do anything to thwart renewable energy development, and it sends a tragic message to businesses and investors. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
This week, more than 1,300 citizen volunteers have been in Washington, D.C. to lobby for, wait for it, a bipartisan solution to climate change. You heard that right. In the face of political divisiveness and gridlock, volunteers from all 50 states are trying to find common ground on climate change policy. What's even more surprising is they say they're making progress. Susan Sharon has more.
It's not just the political climate that makes these volunteers work a steep climb. It's the climate itself. Increasing temperatures, severe storms, sea level rise. The scientific consensus is that the planet is in peril. And yet, against that backdrop, Peter Monroe of Portland says he has reason for hope.
Our membership has been doubling every year. There are now 85,000 volunteer members. In the state of Maine, we have contact lists of upwards of 700 or 800 members.
Monroe is talking about membership in the Citizens Climate Lobby. He's on the steering committee of the Portland chapter. It's a grassroots organization that trains people to advocate for what they want. And what they say they want is a livable world. Twice a year, hundreds of members head to D.C. to make their case in private meetings with members of Congress. And the first step they're proposing?
The starting point is putting a price on carbon, which is to say carbon dioxide. It would start at $15 per ton per year, and every year it would go up by $10 per ton.
The fee would be imposed on the oil and gas industry, importers of oil and gas, and on coal companies. It would generate billions of dollars for the federal government. And what the Citizens Climate Lobby then proposes to do is distribute the money to American households in equal shares, a maximum of two per family.
So that a family of four every month would receive a energy dividend check of $288 in the first year. And that amount of money would go up each year. That's serious money. That's $3,500 per year.
Supporters of the carbon fee and dividend say the money could be used to offset increased costs of gasoline, heating oil, and other products that are passed on to consumers. Critics like conservative talk show host Rush Limbaugh lambasted it as an excessive, erroneous tax.
It is an endless way to separate people from their money. And all you have to do to incur it is live.
But Peter Monroe and the members of the Citizens Climate Lobby are not deterred. They point to a recent poll by the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication that shows Republican voters' concern about global warming has increased by 5% since last fall. They also tout the growth in membership in the Climate Solutions Caucus, which they helped create. It's a bipartisan group in the U.S. House that reviews policies to address climate change. No one can join unless he or she partners with someone else from across the aisle. Over the past 2 years, 78 members have come on board, 39 Democrats and 39 Republicans.
I think it's a recognition that climate change is real. Just a few years ago, they were talking about sea level rising in a matter of inches. Now we're talking about feet.
Independent Maine Senator Angus King was one of the first members of Congress to speak out about climate change. But King says he hasn't signed on to recent legislation to create a carbon fee and dividend system. He has questions about how the dividends will be distributed. He also thinks the approach may soon become unnecessary.
Because I think we're moving very rapidly toward renewables just because that's where the market is.
I think it's a very thoughtful plan. It's a very bipartisan plan in terms of its origin.
Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree says she supports the cap and dividend idea, which has the blessing of individuals as diverse as NASA climate scientist James Hansen, former Vice President Al Gore, Harvard economist James Minkow, and former Secretary of State George Shultz.
You know, we can't even get a bill to the floor or a debate in a committee right now in this particular Congress, but I'm glad to see that there are people on the outside really moving forward on this.
Pingree is the only member of Maine's congressional delegation to fully endorse the plan. Republican Congressman Bruce Poliquin opposes it because his spokesperson says he fears it could open the door to higher electricity and home heating costs. And a spokesperson for Republican Senator Susan Collins, who has previously co-sponsored legislation to cut carbon emissions and supports efforts to address climate change, says Collins wants to see solutions based on the best available science. Peter Monroe agrees there will need to be other steps taken to reduce greenhouse gases and adapt to climate change. But he says Congress will have a tough time overlooking the Citizens Climate Lobby proposal for at least one reason.
We consist of constituents, and constituents are the most influential people with members of Congress.
And those constituents, Monroe says, have been trained not to take no for an answer. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, June 12th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.